Someday Christmas men won't be boys, playing with bombs like kids play with toys. One warm December our hearts will see a world where men are free. Someday at Christmas there'll be no wars, when we have learned what Christmas is for. When we have found what life's really worth, there'll be peace on earth. Someday all our dreams will come to be. Someday in a world where men are free. Maybe not in time.
Well, whether you're a Christian, Jew, Muslim, or a humanist, this is the season of giving. And that's a good thing because there is a ton of trouble out there. At CACLV, we see unusually high incidence of behavioral health issues, especially mental health. And you know, when the system kicks you enough, like trying to find employment in an 8% unemployment market for 5 years, you can start turning on yourself and believing that you're not worth much. There's an endless foreclosure crisis. The middle class's demise is ongoing. Poor people are falling further and further behind. Waiting lists for homeless shelters are growing. I'm Alan Jennings, and I'm your host for Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is community-supported public radio, WDIY. My guest tonight are three truly amazing people. And by the way, you should put your headphones on. First, I have Laurie Ghostly Hackett. Laurie, just in the interest of full disclosure, is a former board president and an old friend. Laurie is responsible for the contributions made by Air Products. She's a trustee of the R.K. Larros Foundation, and she is also on the committee that distributes funds for the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Laurie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Alan. I'm glad to be here.
Secondly, I've got Charlie Marcon. Charlie is the newest trustee for the biggest and oldest, I think, foundation in the Lehigh Valley, the Harry C. Trexler Estate, or Harry C. Trexler Trust. Charlie also is a trustee or a member of the Board of Governors of the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation. He has a very successful company called Dugan & Marcon that is a generous company. And personally, Charlie and his wife Ruth just received the Philanthropist of the Year Award from the Association of Fundraising Professionals. And then finally, I have the colorful and beloved and just remarkable Marlene O. Fowler, who is known by everybody who loves her as Linny Fowler. Linny, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Charlie, did I get to say welcome to the show?
No, you didn't, Alan.
Well,
but
welcome to the show.
Thank you, and I'm pleased to be here.
Between the three of you, I didn't add it up, but there are millions of dollars in assets that lead to, actually, I think more like tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in assets that lead to millions of dollars in annual giving in the Lehigh Valley that the three of you have responsibility for. Let me start with, the question. You know, it's got to be really cool giving away, especially other people's money, but including giving away your own. Is it fun? I mean, is it fun? Is it stressful? How do you feel about the work of philanthropy?
Well, I'll start, Alan. I think it's fun. The difficulty is, for me at least, so many people, when they hear what we do, and again, obviously, especially when it comes to Air Products, it's not my own personal money, but being a good steward of the company, it's hard work. There's so much need. And every time you go out anywhere and you're talking to people all the time with nonprofits who have needs, so the decisions are so hard to make, and we can never meet all the needs that are possible. So it's fun, yes, when we make a real difference, but moreover, it's just so difficult because there's hundreds and hundreds of requests and so much need.
Well, I get a lot of satisfaction of being able to help people and to do good in the community. I think helping the community to grow and to prosper is something that we should all strive for. And Ruth and I take great pride in our ability to be able to do that.
Lenny, are you having fun?
Yeah, but I don't know what I should answer.
You should answer what you want to answer. Are you having fun, or do you think it's a pain in the neck giving away all that money?
Oh, I really enjoy it. It's kind of like the Bobby Kennedy quote, see a wrong and try to right it. And if I see something that should be done, I want to try to be hop right on the bandwagon and try to make a difference.
You and Charlie are giving away substantial amounts of your own resources. As I mentioned, both of you have been named as the Philanthropists of the Year in the Lehigh Valley by the Association of Fundraising Professionals. What motivates you to do that? Why do you do it, really? I mean, you have friends, Charlie. You hang out with people in a similar situation. Not all of them, a lot of them aren't doing the kind of philanthropy that you do, and they're capable. Why do you do it?
I think to a large extent it depends on how you're taught and how you learn as a young person. My mentor was my uncle Frank Marcon, who started. He's a first generation American, as was my father, and he worked hard for many years and was extremely successful. One of the founding board members of Allentown College of St. Francis de Sales and many other organizations in the Lehigh Valley. And one of the first lessons he gave to me is that we as a company are extremely dependent upon this region for the Lehigh Valley for our business. And our business has been successful. And we really have an obligation to give something back. And we're really pleased to be able to do that when times are good. We essentially share some of our profits, and we're giving back to this Lehigh Valley that has been so very good to us.
Lenny, I've heard you speak from a faith perspective. What motivates you? There is no doubt the Lehigh Valley would be a very, very different place if it wasn't for the work that you've done all these, 15-plus years since I first learned about you, maybe 20 years. What motivates you to do what you do?
Well, I guess there's a Bible quote I always like, in so much as you've done it unto one of them, you've done it unto me. And it makes a difference that you pass this way. And when I see something that needs to be done, I want to hop on the bandwagon and do it, especially when it comes to improving the lives of lower economic people, minorities, or anyone who can't seem to get it as easily on their own. I want to be right there to be a catalyst.
What I'm trying to figure out is, there are plenty of people. There is considerable wealth in this region, and Air Products has created a lot of that. Air Products CEOs have been amazing. I mean, one after another have been amazing. How do we? I mean, I think high profile giving is a really good thing. I know a lot of donors do it anonymously, but how do we get others to join that effort like the way you do? Do you have any ideas? I mean, do you bug your friends, Charlie? When you kick their butt at Saucon Valley, do you tell them, you're betting on, they have to match your contributions for the month if you beat them or anything? I mean, have you tried that?
Well, I haven't tried that. I don't know how effective that would be.
You lose?
I'm not always on the winning side of those little wagers. But you're right, Alan. There's a lot of people in the region, anywhere, who have the wealth, who have the ability to participate, and they just choose not to. I think what we can do is to set an example. When we get the opportunity to talk to our friends and neighbors about organizations that need their support and try to encourage them to provide the support, But you know, it's a cultural thing, and not everybody agrees. It's unfortunate because there's an enormous amount of wealth in this region, and if we could tap it, things would be a lot better than they are. And I don't want to suggest that things are not good. Things are good in the Lehigh Valley.
You know, I also worry that there's a generational difference. You know, I have occasions. I don't want anybody to think I hang around golf, country clubs or anything. I don't know. I have people commenting on the blogs wanting to know how much I make. I have occasion to be in rooms full of people that I've known for many years. And, you know, Lehigh Country Club, Saucon Valley Country Club. And I find myself knowing fewer and fewer people in those places. I used to go to lunches, and I'd make the rounds. You know, I'd know most of the people there because they were engaged in their community. They were charitable. They're on boards of directors. I go to some of those places now, and I don't know those people, which means they're a younger crowd, and it says a lot, I think, about their level of involvement. And Laurie, I don't want to suggest that you're a lot younger than anybody else in the room, but do you see that too? I mean, do you think that there's a difference in generations? I mean,
I do, Alan, but I disagree a little bit. I was just talking to someone about this today. The difference I see is I think there's another generation coming up. I mean, we know who the leaders are of the Lehigh Valley now, but what I see is sort of the next generation who does two things. I think they're giving. More importantly, though, they're adding in their time, and they are they're taking leadership positions with nonprofits where they hadn't before. They're instead of getting the CEO to be the honorary chair of whatever, I'm seeing sort of the next crop coming up. And so I think they're rolling up their sleeves. They're true community servants, and many of them have the ability to write a check as well. So that's what I'm seeing.
And you don't think that that's a function of your persuasive skills at Air Products? because truly, I think Air Products stands out in that sense. And I know that that's something that you've worked hard at.
We have. Sure, maybe if they think, geez, if I agree, she'll leave my office, you know. But for us at Air Products, I know it goes back to something very important. Leonard Poole, the founder of our company, wrote a letter to all the employees in 1962. And in it, he talked about three things that were most important to those of us at Air Products. The first one is safety at all times. Secondly was customer service, the importance of always doing the right thing with customers. And thirdly, we have a responsibility to serve this community and every community where we operate. Those three values are still at the top of our list today with John McGlade as CEO. So I think every day we're thinking about that and doing what we can.
You know, I've always said, there's a little bit of disclosure I need to do here. First of all three of my guests have been very supportive of my agency, and I want to make sure. So if you think I'm going to take pot shots at these guys, I'm not, even though they probably don't believe me. But secondly, Bill Dotremont-Smith, the executive director of the radio station, wanted to make sure that everybody understood that they are also supporters in various ways of the station, and wanted to make sure that nobody thought that this was, some attempt to promote specific donors. These were my requests, my invitation. Bill had nothing to do with who I invited. I'd rather be the beggar than the one being begged. I think you're in a really, really tough spot. I mean, as I joked at the beginning about how cool it must be to give away money, especially other people's money, but it's got to be really, really difficult. How do you go about the process of determining which organizations get funding when you know that you can't even scratch the surface, really?
Well, I'm going to now with my Trexler Fund and my Lehigh Valley Community Foundation hat. We evaluate the applicants for grants. We don't just arbitrarily hand the money out. You give it to organizations that number one are making have meaningful programs that are really the programs are really have an influence on the community. Organizations that are well managed. One of the things that you want to be really careful about is that you're not just giving money to the people who run the organization. You're giving it for program, So you got to be careful that you're giving it to organizations that are well managed and are really making a difference in the community. I think that is extremely important.
How do you know they're well managed? How do you know that they're making a difference?
You can do an evaluation from a financial standpoint. You want organizations that are financially stable.
Reserves?
Reserves
is a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, reserves are a good thing, but I got to tell you, I've been on a lot of boards, and one of the things that I always strive to do when I'm on the board is to get the reserves up to a limited number of months of cash flow, and believe me, it's really hard. All nonprofits, particularly the social agencies and the cultural agencies, really struggle from month to month. But you can evaluate their viability. You can read their 990s, which are the nonprofit tax return. It is public information, and if you have a subscription to GuideStar, you can go in and read them. But that gives a lot of information. And we at Trexler and the Community Foundation, we go and visit the organizations. We go and knock on the door and walk around, talk to people and see what they're doing, talk to people involved in their programs. There are ways it can be done. It takes a little work, but it's certainly worth doing.
Do you look at administrative overhead?
Absolutely.
The salaries of the CEO or executive director?
Well, it comes into play, and I notice, Alan, that yours is very...
No, that's not the point.
Alan and I have, by the way, and also in full disclosure, you can tell Alan's friends by the people that he invites to Orioles games, and I've been going to Orioles games with Alan now for many years, and I think whenever the Orioles are on a losing streak, he calls me, because I think every game I've seen, the Orioles have won. But Alan, you're a good example of a stewardship of the assets of the organization. Alan is probably underpaid. I know he's underpaid for what he does. But that's what it is. When you go into nonprofits, you don't expect to make a lot of money.
The argument that keeps being made to me is that if you want talent, you got to pay for it. And even if I'm not willing to earn the kind of money that others do, they're going to have to pay it when they replace me. It's an ages old argument, and we don't need to get into it any further than that. Laurie, how do you scrutinize?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with Charlie that last year we got we get close to just over 1,000 applications, certainly.
Those are from all over the world.
No, in the Lehigh Valley.
1,000 from the Lehigh Valley.
At least, oh absolutely. Gosh. Now, again, we're blessed to, we gave out last year about 1.5 million in the Lehigh Valley. For us, we certainly look at the financials. For us, it's very important to look at the board to make sure, as Charlie was indicating, that there are diverse boards of directors, and it's not just, the husband and the wife and a cousin and the father-in-law makes up the board of directors. But something that we're doing this year is we're really looking at impact. How is it making a difference? Tell us how many kids' lives are, what is the impact of this gift? I don't care if it was $2,500 or $250,000. What's the impact? And we're asking organizations to share that with us.
Lenny, how do you scrutinize?
I think that's very important, too, is to look at the results that are coming out of it. For instance, Communities and Schools has kids that take kids kind of off the streets who aren't doing well in school, don't look like they're even going to graduate. And they work with them in many things in addition to motivating them. And at the end of those 3 or 4 years that they're in the program, most of them graduate. Now, I just think that's a real plus.
And Charlie Marcon's a long-serving former board member of Communities and Schools. That's a great shout-out to Communities and Schools.
Oh, yeah.
I was on their board for almost 15 years.
We're going to need to take a short break. The first thing I want to do, though, is thank Ray Schwenk, who's always...
did I screw that up?
No, you're fine, Alan.
who is always right there with me, making sure that I don't do anything too stupid. He's a volunteer, and he does great work here at WDIY. Ray, thanks for being here, as always. Just make sure the next song is the right song. We're listening to WDIY, Listener-Supported Community Public Radio. I'm Alan Jennings, your host. My guest tonight three of the most remarkable people in the Lehigh Valley. Charlie Marcon, who does work as a philanthropist with the Truxer Trust and Lehigh Valley Community Foundation and others. Lenny Fowler, an unbelievable philanthropist. And Laurie Gosley-Hackett, who does an extraordinary job at the Laris Foundation. And our products, stay with us. We've got lots to talk about.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Cedar Crest College School of Adult and Graduate Education Master of Education Program. Continue your education with an MED in early childhood or secondary education or in the art of teaching for certified teachers. More information at sage.cedarcrest.edu. sage.cedarcrest.edu.
Ho, ho, hoin'. Where you think on Christmas it be snowing? And people get their equal hit the 411 for growing, you knowin'. We're blowing in the ghetto, they get nothing. No toys for little boys, no curls for girls, a turkey stuffing. They laugh, they know that half the peasants ain't thick. You might just want to ask her with my presents, ain't Nick? So think a little about the people minus money. And when you get your dough, why don't you show some kindness, honey? Go ahead, get fed, and spread a little love. Give what you can afford. It's
like you gotta love Run DMC. And I did the Grinch and got Laurie going. That was kind of about the point about people who aren't giving and really should be giving. And my hope is that we're having some impact on some of those people tonight. And Run DMC, you can't, you got to, if you're interested in the streets and what's going on in urban communities, they speak, you know, they speak the truth. I want to talk for a minute about government. I think there's a mindset out there that we can solve these problems without government. And I'm just wondering, you know, as the people who do the most philanthropy in the Lehigh Valley, I'm not asking you to make a political statement. I just want you to talk about the reality of what you're able to do relative to what we're able to do as a collective society through government. Starting with the question, I mean, do you look at a nonprofit and say they've got plenty of government funding, they don't need our support? How do you look at government as philanthropists?
Well, I think that's a good question, Alan. I think the discussion about the role of government in our society, not just in support of nonprofits and social issues, is a big discussion right now. Almost every agency in the Lehigh Valley has had their government funding cut, and some cut dramatically. The organizations that I am actively involved in does not depend very heavily on government funding anymore, with the possible exception of capital campaigns where the Commonwealth still has a pretty healthy RCAP program. But as far as the funding operations, the government just doesn't do it anymore.
I don't think there's a United Way agency that doesn't get government funding. Is that fair? Do the Boy Scouts get government funding? They might not.
They probably get funding, but you can be confident that they're getting a lot less now. Maybe not in real dollars, but in a percentage of budget, they're getting a lot less now than they did 5-10 years ago.
I know that we, especially this just happened today. In fact, I was talking to an agency, and they were very excited about the government funding that they received, but it had to be matched by new dollars. So what I find, and we're glad that they get them, but what I find is then they end up coming to us or places like us and say, but if only you will help us, we'll be able to finally get this extra $200,000, $300,000, $500,000, you know, from the state. So that puts us in a bit of a dilemma when we've already been at the table and we're glad of it, but we could be the bridge between this and them getting their government funding.
I just think there's an awful lot more the government should be doing. I mean, people have been calling me for weeks about, oh, I need to pay my rent, I need this, I need a job, I need this. People even have called me. They said, oh, the Red Cross or all these other agencies that are supposed to help them, told them to call me. I mean, I think we have to help our people a lot more than we're doing, and especially lower economic and minorities.
We're on the brink of, you know, what is arguably a disaster if, you know, to try to reduce the federal deficit. And you know, I just want to be clear. I am not opposed to cutting the federal deficit. I think it's utterly appropriate, and I think it would be unconscionable for us to leave the kind of debt that we're leaving to our kids' generation. My daughter just had my first grandchild. I don't want that kid to be stuck with the irresponsible behavior of his grandfather's generation. There is a strong mindset that private charity can pick up some of the slack. Are you looking at your giving and saying we need to budget more money because the government is going to cut back all these programs? Are you even thinking that way?
We're not. I mean, we certainly look at it, and it comes in, and we meet with nonprofits who talk about it and ask us to do that. But we then put that back on them to just look more closely at your mission and your programs and what are you already doing that perhaps another agency is doing as well. We make those decisions every day in the corporate world. So could they not look at coming together and perhaps doing some shared services or, you know, looking at some other choices?
How does the economy then impact that thinking? Does the economy being troubled mean to you the needs are greater, therefore we need to do more? Or do you do more when you have more? I mean, do you give away more in an up economy and less in a down when, you know, the ideal would be that the worse things are, the more you're doing. But you're not able to, because part of what's going on is you're not getting the kind of business that you would have in a robust economy. How does the economy affect your charitable giving?
Well, from a personal standpoint, most people make the charitable donations, particularly the annual donations that come in year after year for operations and so forth, that usually comes from current income. So there is a big disconnect when the economy's strong and businessmen like me are making a little bit of money. We have more to give away than when the economy is not working well. Like for construction, the last several years have been really, really difficult. Just the money just doesn't come in. Now, at the same time, when the economy's bad, the needs of the people go up dramatically. So, you know, it's a tough, you know, it's really interesting. When the needs are greatest, it's hardest to raise the money. But you just got to keep at it.
Lenny, how do you look at it? I know a lot of your giving is coming from how the market is, the stock market is performing. Do you does the economy affect your ability to give and the amount that you give?
Oh, sure it does, but it's more like listening to the situations. Like I remember asking someone who certainly had a little bit of something to give, and would you be able to give to this? Oh, no, I give to our church, and that's really enough. And I said, I'm kind of like you. I have a little bit of a mouth. I can say, I can prick consciousness and stuff. And I said, you know, if we can just realize that if you don't help that kid, maybe he's going to be the one to slit your kid's throat to get his wallet. And I do think it is important to try to pass it on and raise funds for the causes and let everybody know what the cause is and how good it is and how good the result is. Because without this help, there'd be a lot of suffering.
What about controversy? Because my feeling is that if a nonprofit, I run the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley, as you know, and we run the Second Harvest Food Bank. And if we ran the best Second Harvest Food Bank in the country, that good work could get wiped out in about 5 minutes of congressional votes on the House and Senate floor. So in my mind, advocacy is at least as important as the services that we provide. Because you cut child nutrition programs, I'm going to have to come up with more food, you know, at the food bank. If you cut food stamps, I'm going to have to come up with more food at the food bank. You cut housing subsidies and Medicaid and all those different programs. And you know, in my opinion, we have an obligation as nonprofits to stand up and speak out on these kinds of issues. A lot of nonprofits are scared to death to do that because they think they're going to offend donors and scare away donors. Do you factor that into your thinking? This organization's, shut Jennings up for crying out loud? How do you approach the role of nonprofits in speaking out on policy issues that affect the work that they do and that we see in our communities?
Well, one example that I just attended, and that was the Children's Coalition of the Lehigh Valley. And there's an outstanding advocacy group who's bringing issues to light that I didn't know about, that we don't know about. Some of those children's issues they're not in front of us every day. So we rely on that. But we rely on them to be honest and accurate with their numbers, to have the right people at the table, to make a good case. I've just recently attended a wonderful breakfast that they had where they're looking at some policy and some issues around children's health, both physical health, bringing some of the doctors, and psychological health, health and what's happening with kids. And then if we don't take care of one, a kid with a bad set of teeth, is going to, if he doesn't get the proper dental care, that's going to go into the rest of his life. So small example, but we welcome it. We welcome it, but we rely on them, though, to keep us informed.
Charlie, to look at it, is that a factor for you?
Well, I'm kind of a the need is extremely important, and when we look at our personal gifts, we have our favorites, and the early childhood, trying to figure out how to improve the public schools, our education system. Huge problem. These issues that are, that really, I call them organizations that are building social infrastructure, are the ones that I personally have leaned toward. Lenny, and you mentioned the communities and schools program that encourages kids to graduate from high school. I'm involved in an early education program with Ed Donnelly and Lee Butz, where they're trying to improve the financing for preschool and those sort of things. But yeah, you have to have a passion for what you do. You have to have a passion for your cause, and I think if you do, you're going to put your money where your passion is.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on listener-supported community public radio. This is WDIY FM 88.1. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, and I have the privilege of having three people who control an enormous part of the philanthropy in the Lehigh Valley, including Lenny Fowler, who needs no further introduction, Charlie Marcon, whose work includes Trexler Trust Giving, as well as the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation, and Laurie Ghostly Hackett, who is Air Products charitable giver. Bad title. Actually, the Manager of Community Affairs and Philanthropy. It's a cool title. She also is a trustee at the R.K. Larros Foundation and helps the Iron Pigs as well. The city of Allentown has an opportunity right now that is extraordinary. It is truly a transformational change taking place in downtown Allentown, and an incredible mix of public stimulus for private investment. Hundreds of thousands of square feet of new office space, housing to put people in the downtown. And yet, right outside what is the zone, the neighborhood improvement zone, is a neighborhood with a lot of challenges. We have, I think, an opportunity and I think an obligation with the NIS to have some spillover of that benefit into the neighborhood. I know you all have an urban a soft spot for urban communities. Have you thought about how you do your contributions in light of that huge opportunity? Do you see it as an opportunity? You don't need to go there now because of new wealth is being created, or do you see it as something that really needs an additional push in order to have it have the truly transformational impact that I think it's capable of having?
I had had two of my boards, one of which was the Da Vinci Discovery Center, and I forget the other right now, who say they really do want to get some things going right in Center City for the kids, not only for the kids out of the town and the suburbs, but right in the city, trying to get things, discover how to make things and do that, and also to get together and try to get some teaching and learning skills. For instance, one thing is a thing some of you may have heard of. It's being run by the Allentown Symphony Association called El Sistema, and it started in Venezuela. They went down in the sewer and took the kids out of the sewers and gave them food. Then it taught them skills. Then it gave them instruments and had them go get together in a group and learn a skill. And they now have it up here in the Allentown Symphony Association. And it's quite amazing to see all these kids, kind of like the bottom of the barrel, coming up and learning how to take directions, learning about camaraderie and how to get things done and take directions and all that. It's such a wonderful experience for the kids. I wish there could be more of this.
REI Air Products has been paying a lot of attention to downtown, Allentown issues for some long time. Charlie, you've been an urban guy. What opportunities do you think are exist there? Do you look at that as something that we need to really focus on in the years ahead?
Well, I personally believe very, very strongly that the revitalization of our urban communities is key to the future success of economic development throughout the Lehigh Valley. So anything we can do to improve conditions in Allentown, Bethlehem, and our numerous boroughs, I am in favor of. I think the NIS creates a tremendous opportunity for Allentown. But if all we do is develop, I'm going to call it a pocket of wealth within the city, and if there's no spillover, if the neighborhood and the communities that are immediately adjacent to the NIS don't improve, I don't think the NIS project is successful. There's going to be an enormous number of jobs created. And my hope is that the people who live within walking distance of that development, I'm hoping that a lot of them can get jobs and they can walk to work and they can go home and they're making a decent wage and they can do what they need to do to improve their neighborhood. But you know, the NIS by itself is not enough to really turn the region around. I mean, it's a start, but it's got to be more than just that 130 acres. There's got to be a spillover into the rest of the city.
Ari, how do you look at it? Is the company looking at it in any special way?
Yeah, we're certainly looking at it and following it. We're so interested. But we've been strong and steady with our support of the inner cities as well, and that will completely remain. I mean, places like HADC, who we've supported for decades, Sacred Heart Hospital, we just announced a leadership contribution there because of the amazing things that Sacred Heart is doing. 51% of the people they serve are uninsured or underinsured, and they're living right there in the neighborhoods. So places like that, we've been there, the Allentown Promise neighborhoods. We've got people involved as volunteers. We're glad to use the Air Products Foundation to support it, and we'll continue to do so.
Is there a reason why you didn't mention the Sixth Street Shelter or the Community Action Development Corporation?
You know, I was getting to it. I was getting to them.
There is an effort being made to bring all the parties together and make sure that there is some deliberate effort to make sure that there isn't this demilitarized zone. It says, you know, folks that look like us, we stay on this side of the street. Folks that look like you all over there, you just stay over there and we'll be fine. That's a sure recipe for this failing, I think. And I'm really proud of the 7th Street improvements. I think it'll make people a lot more comfortable driving into the city. And I think everything that we can do to encourage people to spend money downtown is good for the Lehigh Valley. You're listening to listener-supported community public radio. This is WDIY, and your show is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests tonight, Lenny Fowler, Charlie Marcon, and Laurie Gosley-Hackett. Remarkable work that they do helping the Lehigh Valley share its wealth. Stay with us.
Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto. Hitch up your reindeer and go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem's South Side presenting Christmas City Follies 13, directed by J.P. Jordan, created and performed by the Touchstone Ensemble. This annual classic yet again reimagines what the holidays are all about with music, wit, and holiday hijinks. November 29th to December 22nd. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
Come down to the manger, see the little stranger wrapped in swaddling, oh, the Prince of Peace. The wheels start turning, the torches start burning, and behold, wise men journey from the east. How a little baby boy bring the people so much joy, son of a carpenter.
I apologize for the Christian-centric music, but it's my faith tradition, and you know, it's the concept of, you know, giving is what I think it really is all about. I you know, if God is love, you can't demonstrate love without giving, and so for those that I might have insulted by using my faith tradition, I apologize for that. But you gotta love Rick Danko and the band. We started to talk. We got into the fiscal cliff issue. One of the things that they're looking at, there are some things that they're looking at that I actually support. I think, for example, the mortgage interest deduction on second homes or homes that are $1 million homes. You know, I think those are fair game. But they're also talking about the deduction for charitable giving. And you know, Charlie and Lenny, I don't know if you pay enough attention to the tax implications. Charlie, I think you do. What do you think is at stake here?
I think it's enormous. I think if the charitable deduction goes away, it'll be catastrophic for social agencies, because that would suggest that monies, instead of coming from individuals, would need to come from the government. And from what we've seen out of government the last couple of years, they're not going to do it. I mean, so anything that happens in this fiscal crisis, which discourages philanthropy, I think will have some really big detrimental effects on our society.
Laurie, I know that Air Products is, and I'm thrilled about it, has taken advantage of tax credit programs. How much does your budget, you know, the amount of money that the folks that are counting the beans give you to give away, how much is that impacted by those tax considerations?
90% of what we give is from the Air Products Foundation, and so they're not. That's not any tax credit money that we give. So a very small amount, but we believe strongly in doing what we can to support certainly those and being involved in those tax credit programs. So that number was around 400,000 last year, and we were glad to do it. But even when we don't, but our focus remains the same. We would give your agency, if we believed so much in your case and in what you were doing, and that
what do you mean if?
We believe in what you're doing.
What are you saying, Laurie?
Nothing, Alan. I'm so sorry I said the word if. We believe so much in Alan and what you're doing. And so whether we choose to do that through maybe some EITC dollars or through money from the Air Products Foundation, if we're with you and a partner, we're with you. And that doesn't change.
The foundation, is it funded annually or was it seeded with a whole chunk of money years ago?
It's seeded with money and some other, when we do some other business dealings, some money is put in more into that. So
because that part would be affected by the federal the deduction.
Yes, it would. But the foundation is it's strong and healthy now, and our funding, our giving has continued to grow.
So for our listeners, who by the way are the smartest listeners in the Lehigh Valley, a couple of things to put on your to-do list. Communicate to your congressional representatives that the charitable deduction should be sacrosanct, and start thinking about writing out more checks to the organizations that deal with the issues that you care about. If you're a new nonprofit or if you're a new person getting into the challenge of fundraising, what kind of advice would you give to that person on how to do effective fundraising?
I think it's very important to get your organization before the public eye and make everybody realize what you're doing and how the kids are progressing and doing much better than they normally would have been doing. For instance, like scouting, everybody talks about scouting, Cub Scouting, Boy Scouting. They go to camp, they have great programs, they have a lot of fun, and they get good funds. But I think it's very good to get it all before the public eye, and that they'll want to get involved, jump on the bandwagon.
Your organization needs to have a record of success. They've got to make an impact on the community. So if you're a new fundraiser and you're going to ask a Lenny Fowler for money, you've got to be able to justify the ask. You've got to have be representing an organization that really makes an impact in the community. I think that's extremely important.
How often does somebody come to you cold? You've never heard of them. You don't know them. How much does it matter that they understand who you work with, who you respect and appreciate, who you listen to, those kinds of things? You know, the whole connection issue.
Well, the cold call is really, really difficult.
To voicemail.
Yeah. Very few people are going to respond to a cold call. There's a couple of tenets in fundraising. And number one is people give to people. Laurie mentioned earlier how important it is to the board of directors of these various organizations. You know, if you're going to, when I get asked, I want to see who their other donors are. I want to see who's on their board. I want to know how well that those members of that board, those who are capable, I want to know how much they're giving. You know, if there's somebody on there that I know is capable of giving an enormous amount of money, I would expect them to give substantially to that particular organization. Another piece of advice I would give to fundraisers is do your follow-up. I can't tell you how often I get one piece of mail, I get an email, I get a voicemail, and somebody says, please give to my organization, and there's never a follow-up. I can assure you, if that's an organization that I've never given to before, I am not giving to them again now either.
And I would add to that, Alan, when I get something in the mail that's addressed to Dear Sir, yeah, guess where that's going, you know, in the trash. The other thing I've noticed, and there are some relatively new nonprofits, I have one in mind. There may be a mission. Maybe something happened in your family that you've started a nonprofit, a health nonprofit, because of a child or an issue in your family. Don't get so caught up in stay passionate about the mission, but bring in other people that can help you. It's sort of like an entrepreneur starting a company. There's a time comes when you've got to step aside and hire an executive director or move it on so it becomes less emotional. The other thing for us, for Air Products, we have 4,000 employees here in the Lehigh Valley. we get cold calls all the time. People call me all the time about funding. And my first question is there an Air Products person involved? Because we believe if our employees are taking time away from their work and their family to volunteer, we should celebrate that. And they'll say, well, how do I find an Air Products person? I say, go to Chick-fil-A on Hamilton Boulevard at lunchtime. They're all there. But not on Sundays. That's right. So for us, we really look at champions of where our employees putting their time, because that tells me if we have a lot of employees volunteering for Community Action, Sixth Street Shelter, how'd I do?
Good. That was good. Thanks.
Then it's a priority for us as well.
Amount that you ask for. I had a prominent philanthropist in Lehigh Valley advise me in the following way. Alan, ask for more than you think they're capable of giving, because people who are successful will be flattered that you think of them as successful as you do by asking for too much. If you ask for less, you'll get less. Is that good advice? I think a lot of nonprofits are kind of too modest in their asks. Is that a fair? I know I'm asking. Your answer means you're going to open the door for bigger requests, perhaps. But is there merit to that point?
Yes, I believe so, Alan. I think, like you say, if you ask for more than this person is willing to give, they will certainly not be offended. On the other hand, once you throw a number out, you know, you've really created your ceiling.
Right.
So, if you really want $10,000 out of somebody, you don't ask them for 10. You ask them for 20 or 25, and it's a lot of people aren't going to give you what you ask for anyway.
Right.
So you don't want to put that ceiling too low. You want to keep it up where you've got an opportunity to get your goal when there's finally a commitment.
You had talked about the board and looking at the board of directors, and yet, Laurie, you had indicated that you think that one of the things that you look for in a board of directors is the diversity of the board. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with all due respect, Charlie, and I don't necessarily mean you in this case, but a lot of people in your world don't know the poor folks and minority leaders in the Lehigh Valley. And so if you look at my board, I've got a really diverse board. But that also means that you're not going to recognize a lot of the names. So I try to, you know, for the third of our board that is private sector representatives, I try to get really high-profile people, which is why Laurie was on my board. And, Charlie, I don't know why you haven't been, or Lenny, you, but that's okay. That there are names that people will recognize, because I understand that particular point. But there is that, you know, kind of disconnect there.
You know, Alan, every organization in the Lehigh Valley that's worthy, and most of them are, would really like to have good diversity on their boards. It's hard. It really is. It's hard to find folks who have the time and are willing to make a commitment. I know, speaking at Symphony, every year, when it's time to appoint new board members, invariably, who do we know that's a minority that can add some diversity to our board? That's one of the first discussions.
It's a great issue that you just raised, and Charlie. And part of the problem is that if you're meeting during the day, there aren't a lot of people of color that are high enough up in their organizations where they can escape their workplace during the day. Which is why whenever we have a diverse group, we try to meet after 4 o'clock in order to accommodate. I hate evening meetings, but at the same time, you got to recognize that different people have different lifestyles and different ability to get out. I'll tell you, there are a lot of talented people in the Lehigh Valley, and anytime any of our listeners who was in a nonprofit organization that wants help in identifying minority leadership, I'd really like to be able to help, because there are, mm-hmm. every day more new talented people are moving into the Lehigh Valley that that are really making a difference in our community. So I hope both any of you or our listeners will take advantage of that. I'm sorry, Lenny.
Well, I've been interested. We talked about this on the way from the car. How do you decide whether or not you want to name something publicly or do it anonymously? I always wanted to do things secretly, but then all of a sudden I realized I want to stand up and be counted. And two really good examples came to my mind, and one is as a beginning volunteer in this town, I used to go up to South Terrace to work, and I would always, you know, we wanted to train teachers, but the teachers there used to say, to-be teachers would say, oh, I wish I could just go up to Natick, but there's no bus line, I can't get up to the classes, no place to watch the kids or anything. So when I was requested by Art Scott and David Shafford to give money to the Bethlehem Steel, the small building that's now the Fowler Community Center on 3rd Avenue, I guess it is, the 3rd or 4th.
Southside Campus.
Southside Campus.
Community College.
They say that is such a wonderful blessing because it has about 8,000 people involved there in many, many different capacities. And I think that's a wonderful experience where I couldn't have known except maybe by a little background. And the same thing was true with the Valley Youth House, Camp Fowler. They went out of business, and I kept thinking, this is such a waste. Let's give this to Valley Youth House, and they can share it with lots of people. And also be the catalyst. Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, we're going to start running out of time. I want to remind everybody, and I keep failing to do this, and every time I finish my show, somebody tells me, Rick Weaver's out there waiting to tell me that I keep forgetting to point out that this is Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, and my guests tonight are Charlie Marcon, Laurie Ghostly Hackett, and Lenny Fowler, three amazing philanthropists who have made an extraordinary difference in Lehigh Valley. Isn't there some degree of I don't want to call it selfishness because that's not a fair word, but isn't there some degree of being a philanthropist having bringing a benefit back to you in many different forms? For example, Laurie, the Air Products is a high profile company. You want people to know that you're a company that cares about your community. You want people. You're not a consumer based company, but a bank wants people to know that if you put your money in their deposit accounts, that's going to come back to benefit their community. Is that fair?
Yeah, we're not selling liquid nitrogen to you.
Right.
But we, as I said earlier, we have a responsibility to serve. And for a long time, though, also we would say to agencies, oh, we don't want our name on the T-shirt. That's okay. But now, in the last 5 or 6 years, I'm saying, you know what? We're proud of this. We want our name on the T-shirt because I know it helps. When I see that Linney's supporting something or Trexler Trust is, and then Air Products does, I know that helps nonprofits raise their profile. You know, and it helps them with further fundraising. So we're proud to have it out there. It help, and selfishly, it helps our employee recruitment and our retention. An employee goes home at night and says, guess what we did today? I went to a Miracle League dinner, and we were the sponsor. We sponsored a team. So that really matters to us.
Charlie, do you see that? Dugan and Marcon is not unlike Air Products in the sense I'm not going to walk into Dugan and Marcon and buy a wall, that supports a highway overpass. Do you find that philanthropic work on the part of the company has some kind of benefit that comes back to the company?
Well, it certainly does. You get a higher profile. People know who you are. I think it really has. It has certainly has a positive effect, but from our standpoint, as I said earlier, we're giving back to the community, which is so generous to us. Without the Lehigh Valley, we wouldn't be here. So we're happy to share with what we have.
We have about a minute left in the show. Look down the road a little bit. Do you kind of have any sense of where we're going and how your philanthropy fits into where we're going, either because you want to help it get there or you want to do everything you can to thwart the direction things are going? Do you look down the line at where we're going and think about how you might want to impact that direction?
I'll say quickly, we're lucky to do a lot of little contributions throughout the Lehigh Valley. One thing I think about every day is, how can we all come together and do something really big and really meaningful and really impactful?
Like the NIS.
Like something.
Charlie, Lenny, got any?
Well, my strength as a businessman is my sales skills. And when you're a salesman, you're very optimistic. I'm optimistic that the future is going to be really good. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be different, and we're going to have to work hard. But life in the Lehigh Valley is good, and I think it's going to continue that way.
Part of the reason why it's so good is because of Charlie Marcon, Laurie Ghostly Hackett, and Lenny Fowler. I'm really, really grateful to you for you coming on my show. This was a Christmas-oriented show in the sense that it was all about philanthropy. Thanks so much for being on the show. Next month, we're going to want to talk about Martin Luther King because we'll be close to the holiday. I'm your host. I'm Alan Jennings. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great holiday season. Let's get to work in the new year.
All of you, a very Merry Christmas. And at this joyful time of year, we want you to be with us.